Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, you've been jamming in the KLR Draft Challenge, and I have as well. How's it going for you?
Well, I've only done two so far. Well, I guess I've done three drafts, but I haven't played any rounds with my third draft. I think I've drafted pretty well. I had a good first deck. Was a really, really good blue-black deck, splashing white for the Master Trinketeer, the, like, 3-2 that can make servos and can give Thopters and servos +1/+1. That was really sweet. I had Tezzeret in that deck, but I 1-2'd, and then I 3-2'd with a really spicy, I sent this to you and Alex in our Discord chat, I had a really spicy 5-color brew with 4 attune with ethers.
Yeah, sweet. It has been tough. I have had the same records as you so far. I 1-2'd my first one with a base white green deck with Nissa that I opened pack one, pick one, and then I 3-2'd again with a base white green deck with an Ajani that I opened pack one, pick one. But it felt weird getting pigeonholed into green white two drafts in a row. I've actually done a third draft also, and I was supposed to be green white, I think, in that third draft, but I just didn't want to do it again. So I sort of shoehorned my way into blue white, and it didn't work out super well. But it was odd drafting green white so much after not having done it hardly at all over the course of Kaladesh so far.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, like we've been saying, I think all the colors are good, all the color pairs are good, but green white, I would say, is one that I am probably not trying to get into very often. I think, you know, this draft challenge is this tournament for folks who don't know on Arena where you enter. It's like twice the cost of a normal draft. And there's some prize support at the very, very top. You know, you have the chance to go 6 wins or 2 losses, whichever comes first. And for me and Ben so far, it's been the 2 losses. And it's not a really good prize support, but I do feel pretty strongly that, like, you know, it'll be over by the time the episode comes out. But I going into it, I was like, I know the prize support is not good, but I feel like I have to vote with my gems that this is something I want to see. I want to see more, you know, it's not even high stakes, but just higher stakes, some sort of limited tournaments. I want WotC and Arena to know that this is something that the community is interested in.
Yep, that's how I felt as well. That's why I've entered 3 times. I will probably play as much as I get a chance to. Also, I would just be willing to pay extra to play best of 3 Kaladesh.
Yeah, that's really, really true. Yeah, I am sad that they did not extend it another week, but best of 3 Kaladesh has been a blast so far.
Yeah, absolutely.
So today we're going to be continuing on the road of Kaladesh here. We're going to be doing our patented What's the Play episodes. We've got some Keeper Mull decisions and then some in-game decisions that we're going to look at from Kaladesh Remastered on Arena. But before we get into that, a couple housekeeping things. First things first is the Lords of Limited Patreon page. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. Obviously, the show always going to be free. But, you know, if you feel like the show is giving you some value, you want to give back to us, we've got some perks there along the way for you depending on which tier you want. Anything from getting access to the Discord and getting a shout out on the show all the way up to getting monthly coaching sessions from me or Ben. So those patrons that joined this week, we are happy to welcome to the fold Jorgen, Charlie, Andrew, and Felix. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. The Discord has been sweet. It's been a great way to connect with people that are also playing this draft challenge, seeing what's doing well for people and, you know, just rooting each other on. So it's been a blast.
Yeah, absolutely.
This podcast is also brought to you in part by Channel Fireball, channelfireball.com. Best place to go for anything and everything you need magic related. We've got some sweet stuff coming up there, you, Alex, and I recorded a Commander Legends video. So we hopped in the Commander Legends draft queues on MTGO and tried to like all queue together and time the countdowns for when we found a match. And we did end up getting the three of us in a match. Took a while.
Yeah.
But we got there. And so we played out a Commander Legends game on MTGO and have all three of our draft videos in the video as well. So something to be on the lookout for from CFB. They've got some other sweet stuff cooking over there. You know, this past week was Thanksgiving week, Black Friday, all that sort of stuff. They have some Black Friday deals that are going to be running until the Monday that this episode is released. So if you're listening to this on the day it comes out, you can head on over to CFB for some sweet Black Friday deals. One of the most interesting ones, I think, if you've been on the fence about CFB Pro, for just $25, you can sign up for 6 months of CFB Pro and get $30 of store credit. So they're essentially paying you in store credit to get on CFB Pro. So pretty sweet. And if you do that, make sure you remember to use code LOL when you go over to Channel Fireball and check out so that they know that we sent you over there.
Yeah, I saw that deal on Twitter and I was kind of blown away. I was like, how is this possible? Like, I just don't really understand, but they're doing it and it's working. So yeah, definitely think that's worth taking them up on.
That's the Riley and Dennis shtick every week on Scrimey River.
Like, oh, is
CFB
it?
Is just giving away money. They've done it again. You know, like, how is John Sasso running a company?
That's funny. All right. Well, Ben, you want to kick things off here with you got a bunch of keeper mole decisions that I'm excited to pick your brain about here.
Yeah, these are all keeper moles from the draft challenge yesterday. Unfortunately, we did not run great in the draft challenge, but it was interesting. I felt myself
partially because of these openers you were gifted. Yikes.
Yeah, it was tough. And I kept overthinking these mulligan decisions a little bit, partly because it was a little bit higher stakes of a draft tournament. So I'm wondering if I got in my head a little bit. So I haven't told you what I did here on
no.
these keeper moles because I want validation or crucifixion, one of the two. So first deck here that we've got is 15 lander. We have 8 green sources, 6 white sources, 1 black source, and triple attune with ether to help smooth our mana. Would have liked one more green source in there, but we have a double white card in Aerial Responder, so I wanted to keep the plane sources fairly high as well. Curve is fine. It's a little clunky of a deck. We have triple seed sculptor in the 2-drop slot along with some other 2s. Good 3s in Aerial Responder, Thriving Rhino, and then the 5-drop slot is pretty clogged. We have triple Self-Assembler, double Dawn Feather Eagle, and Nissa Vital Force. One of the things I kept running into in these drafts was in green-white, you can't really do the Self-Assembler thing because there's
right.
so many good 5s in green, and you kind of have to pick Dawn Feather Eagle highly, but I do like Self-Assemblers, so I just got myself in trouble there a couple times. And then topping off the curve, there's a Rishkar's Expertise that's the rare. It lets you draw cards equal to the greatest power among creatures you control and play a 5-drop for free, which we have plenty of.
Yeah, for sure. Looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's a solid little deck. Very powerful, a little clunky. So first keeper mole from that deck. This is In the Dark, your opening hand. You've already mulliganed once, so this is you're having to put a card back here. And if you mulligan again, you're going down to 5 on the play. Your hand is 4 plains, swamp, forest, and that mythic rare planeswalker, Nissa Vital Force.
Oof, Ben, this is already a mulligan. I didn't miss that the first time I was looking at this image. I think, unfortunately, you have to ship this, would be my gut instinct. Certainly being on the play makes me a little more inclined to keep a clunker like this. But the fact, if you had double green in hand already, I think you can keep this. The fact that one of the things you need to draw in the next 4 turns is a green source, or like, I guess an attune also, but just essentially a blank, like you want to draw both lands and spells with this hand, or a land and spells with this hand, I think you got to ship it.
So there's 10-ish green sources remaining in the deck, just for facts here. 10-ish green sources, and you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 cards that you're happy playing as 2-drops or 3-drops, and you also have 4-drops you can draw.
So that's 12, 3 times. I mean, that you've got, you are likely to hit something, but then you also need to draw a green source. I don't know. I feel like the needing lands and spells aspect of this hand makes me want to ship it.
Yeah, it's tough. I did the Ben warning. I'm going to trust my deck.
Yeah, this is a lot of trusting your deck, though.
It feels your win percentage is so low on 5, though. This was in the dark, too. I had no idea what my opponent was doing.
Right. Yeah, your win percentage is very low on 5, but your win percentage is low if you don't affect the board before turn 5.
Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah, I don't know. That's very close. I did miss the fact that you'd already mulliganed. That makes this a bit more of a yikes.
So I did keep, and I don't remember whether or not I won this game, but we did get a place of Magic. I mean, we drew cards, eventually cast Nissa.
Yeah. I mean, I think the results are irrelevant.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Just trying to story weave for the listeners here.
Sure.
All right. So next one we've got is the same deck. This is against fellow streamer Metal Mario.
Ooh.
Who came into my stream and was like, oh, what's this? And I told him what it was and then joined and promptly crushed me. So opening hand here is Forest, Countless Gears Renegade, Dawn Feather Eagle, Attune with Aether, Pacification Array, Nissa Vital Force, and one of your three self-assemblers.
So you've essentially got two lands, right? Because you've got Forest, Attune.
Yeah, and you're on the play.
You go find a Plains. This hand is really awkward, though, because you basically need to hit three straight lands. Like, you do have a play on two with Countless Gears Renegade. You have Pacification Array, which you can use, like, in this ideal scenario where you do draw then three additional lands to be able to hit your five drops. And you have Pacification Array as something to do with your mana, and also it's like a pseudo removal spell. It's awkward if you aren't drawing lands, because Pacification Array is then kind of dead. And you don't have a ton of two drops in the deck, as we said, right? There's like a couple Seed Sculptors and a Eddy Trail Hawk. This is really close. I guess if it's really close, I would just keep the old yikes and keep.
Yeah, I did the old yikes and keep, and it did not work out very well. Metal Mario curved out with essentially almost a mono red deck and crushed me.
So does that change what you would do here? Do you think like it's just too sketchy of a keep?
Well, this was in the dark, so I had no information. My base assumption in Kaladesh Best of Three is that I'm going to have a little bit of time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that it's not like blisteringly fast.
And I had the Pacification Array to delay if I drew some land drops. And if you drew, I don't know. It's a sketchy keep. I agree.
It's a sketchy keep, yeah. Maybe it is, in fact, a mulligan. I don't know.
I think it probably is a mulligan, but I had already mulliganed. This is what I'm saying. Like, I was getting in my head. I'd already mulliganed a lot in the first match I played. This is the second match.
Yeah. No, that does affect you a lot. I think that even affects me in just a regular, like, you know, three round best of three deal, or even in a best of one run, you know, that mulligans feel really bad.
Yep. All right. Next one. This is still the same deck, and your opponent has mulliganed twice. You've mulliganed once, and you are on the draw. So your opponent's going to five for sure. This is whether or not you want to keep this six or ship it back and look at a five. So this is Plains, Forest for your lands, and then your spells are Revoke Privileges, Propeller Pioneer, Nissa Vital Force, self-assembler. So you can keep and put a card back, or you can mulligan.
I would keep this and then put self-assembler on the bottom.
That is what I did as well. I kept put self-assembler on the bottom, and then my opponent curved out Long Tusk Cub into vomiting their hand, and I bricked on lands. So not great, but I think I made the correct decision there.
Yeah, you have to keep this. Like, you have 16. I guess it's not quite, because we're counting the three attunes. I was going to say you have 16 outs three times or whatever, but you don't quite, because if you brick and then draw a tune, that doesn't mean you get to play Revoke Privileges on curve. So it's the math is a little sketchier, but I still feel pretty. This is the most confident I have felt of my decisions so far of these that you presented, that this is a keep.
Yeah, I kept as well, and I agree for the same reasons. It just didn't work out. All right, next one, we are on to a new deck. It's actually a very similar deck to the first deck. Again, it's a base green-white deck, and we have a Johnny Unyielding instead of Nissa as our Planeswalker of choice, and our five drops are a little bit better. We have double Ridge Scale Tusker, double Dawn Feather Eagle, and then the creature curve is sweet as well. I mean, our three-drop slot is good. We've got triple Glintsleeve Artisan and a Thriving Rhino. We've got some good twos. In a Druid of the Cowl, and then some filler twos, and we've got an Ovia Pashiri that did some serious heavy lifting through the course of this run in the one drop slot.
That card is very good
and good mana. We have nine green sources, eight white sources.
Where no attunes, though. This deck is way worse.
We didn't really have much to do with the energy from the attunes in the other deck, though, so
that's true.
So we've got a bit of a curveball here when we do this next keeper mull. This is game two, and I have sideboarded and changed my mana base up a little bit. So I've sighted in a Restoration Gearsmith off of a single Swamp and two Wild Wanderers. So we have three sources for a Restoration Gearsmith, which is actually in our hand. So our hand is Swamp, Forest, Restoration Gearsmith, Thriving Rhino, Wild Wanderer, and Ridge Scale Tusker. And we are on the play.
Yeah, this, again, I feel pretty confident that this is a keep. Two shots at a mana source to play Rhino on curve. And then whatever, three shots at two lands to play Wild Wanderer on curve is less likely. But as we said before, your curve is like pretty good, though you don't have white, I suppose. So you're like Glintsleeve Artisans are off, but you know, you've got other stuff. You can draw a Druid of the Cowl as well as something that you can play to be able to cast the Wild Wanderers with an additional land. It's a little sketchy, but I think, you know, my general heuristic for Keeper Mulligans is like looking for reasons to keep hands, not reasons to mulligan, because mulliganing is so bad and limited. Like, you know, in Constructed, you can get away with like, you know what your opening hand needs to look like. And especially when you know what the matchup is, right? You like know what the important cards are that you need to find. In Limited, I think it's much more about card quantity than it is card quality. And so I think having seven over six cards is pretty darn important.
Yeah, I agree. I kept here as well. I think the fact that the two Wild Wanderers are in hand, so you know if you draw any lands, your mana is going to work out. Mm-hmm. And you really only have to have four land drops because your Wild Wanderers are going to get you to your fifth land drop for Ridgescale Tusker. Plus, this hand has a good hand. Like, Gearsmithing back a Ridgescale Tusker after it's died or something is pretty big game. So I did keep.
And I think it's not irrelevant that Thriving Rhino is a really good first play of the game.
Yes, agreed. All right, same deck. Again, we're Keeper Mulling here, and we are on the play in the dark. And your hand is this. This is Plains, Forest, Alley Evasion, Nature's Way, Ajani Unyielding.
This is a pretty easy mulligan in my mind.
Yeah, I kept.
You cannot keep this hand.
It's in the dark.
This hand does nothing. This hand is so bad.
Okay, can I change your mind if I tell you that we have...
Nothing you can say will change
Nine. We have 9 hits at 3 CMC or less, and that goes up to 12 hits at 4 CMC or less.
But you can't, like, the 9 hits thing really doesn't sell me, because, like, 9 outs, whatever, twice is sub 50%.
And you're not happy if your first play is a 4 drop with your best card in hand?
No, I'm not. Because the other problem with this hand is that you have no real way to protect a Johnny. Like, you need so much to go right. And again, this hand needs you to draw 2 more lands, which is not something you're interested in doing.
Yeah, I know. I'm bad.
You're not bad. you just had a lot of mulligans yesterday.
Yeah. So I kept this hand and we got steamrolled. I drew all lands, no action from this point.
Yeah.
Okay, so our last and final deck here is a blue-white deck. This is my third entry, my third re-rack here. Mm-hmm. We're 9 islands, 8 plains, mostly to get more blue sources for Double Gear Seeker Serpent at the top of the curve. But this, I think, is the most streamlined deck I've drafted yet. I think this is the best of the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
So twos are good. We have an Aether Swooper, double Eddy Trail Hawk, double Cogworker's Puzzle Knot, Sky Skiff. Again, some Glintsleeve Artisans. Like, we have the support for the Gearseeker Serpents in the 2 and 3s just as like good cards. Double Propeller Pioneer in the 4s, and then a Cloud Blazer and 2 Dawn Feather Eagles as 5s. Some good interaction in Skywhaler Shot, Malfunction, and a Fairgrounds Warden and a Pacification Array.
Yeah, this deck looks, you know, not exciting, but definitely solid.
All right, so our last Keeper Mull here is on the play against an opponent that we know has a Nissa Planeswalker and other good top end. So generally, I think we're better off in the matchup if we can pressure them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So this is our Keeper Mull here. This is Plains Island, Cogworker's Puzzle Knot, Skywhaler Shot, Propeller Pioneer, and double Dawn Feather Eagle on the play.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you would hope to just like rip 3 lands in a row, because this hand has the potential to curve out pretty effectively with Puzzle Knot. And I think, you know, the fact that we know our opponent is green means that they probably have a lot of targets for Skywhaler Shot. So like any land you get, which you're likely to get, you know, even on time, right? One land in the next 2 draws is pretty likely. And then you have Shot to scry to try and find another land. Like, if you can go on curve with this hand, it's going to be good. Like, Puzzle Knot. And the fact that Puzzle Knot is something you can then cast, and then, you know, if you brick on a land, then you still have something to do with your mana in cracking Puzzle Knot as you, like, attempt to go wide to these double Dawn Feather Eagles. I think this hand can go wrong, but I think this is a pretty clear keep in my mind.
It was a keep for me as well. It did not end quite as magically as you describe. I bricked on lands, and then my opponent creeping molded my single planes, and then I was stuck on 2 islands for most of the game.
Woof. Oh my god, that's brutal.
That was how my KLR draft challenge ended yesterday.
That is brutal. So this whole Keeper Mull imager link you have here is just a bunch of you saying, I made the right decision and then got savaged.
No, I made some wrong decisions too. I think we established that as well. I kept some sketchy hands.
It's a lot of, yeah, that's a lot of dicey hands for sure. You were really put up against it back to back to back.
Yep.
All right. So moving away from keeper mulligans and into some in-game decisions. First up here, this was actually, I had the privilege of being joined on stream by Mr. Metronome this week. Thankful to your Thanksgiving break week. I've got to re-rack duo streams, which we haven't done in a long time. So that was fun. So this is from a deck we drafted together, and I got to play out this game together. So this is a black-white grindy deck, classic. Ethan here with triple Night Market Lookout, three vehicles, including Sky Sovereign Console Flagship at the top of the curve, double Restoration Gearsmith, and a hidden stockpile. This deck can grind. It's game three here in a mirror match, and we've sideboarded quite a bit on the draw against our opponent. We took out the Night Market Lookouts and a couple of our clunky vehicles, obviously left in Sky Sovereign. We wanted some more Fabricate, some more two-for-ones, a Pillar Bug to stop their 2/2s and 1/1. So that's where we landed here. And the situation we've got ourselves into is pretty darn interesting here. So we've traded off quite a bit. We're deep into the game here. The life totals are 12 for us and 22 for our opponent. And for anyone who hasn't followed along with our What's the Play episodes before, we'll have a bunch of imager links in the show notes where you download the show. So you can follow along at home if our descriptions aren't as clear as they might be, because this board state is a little complex here. So on our side of the battlefield, we've got four untapped creatures, a Propeller Pioneer, Percata Pillar Bug, and two Servos, as well as a Cogworker's Puzzle Knot, able to be cracked because we have three mana available. So we have the mana available to crack Puzzle Knot and to activate Pillar Bug. And our opponent has Alpha Strike here. They've got Eager Construct, Glintsleeve Artisan with a counter on it, and Fairgrounds Warden wearing an Inventor's Goggles, sending at face here, right? So so three creatures attacking us, and under the Fairgrounds Warden is a Restoration Gearsmith, which is pretty spicy that our opponent took that with us being able to get that end of the battlefield effect if Fairgrounds Warden goes bye-bye. So what could this mean? What does this attack mean, I think, is the first question, right? They're attacking three creatures into our four creatures. We have some reasonable blocks, right? You know, they're attacking a 2/2 into our Pillar Bug. We can put a Pillar Bug and a Servo on their 3/3 Artisan. We can line up all of our creatures on Fairgrounds Warden to try and get back Gearsmith. Like, what does this attack mean with our opponent having two cards in hand?
Yeah, I think, you know, we were both thinking, why is our opponent attacking with Fairgrounds Warden here? There's no way that our opponent wants to trade off Fairgrounds Warden, because it's a disaster if we get our Restoration Gearsmith back and get to rebuy a creature. If Fairgrounds Warden dies, our opponent is in considerably bad shape.
Right.
So I think that leads us to believe that there are tricks involved, and then the question is to try to figure out what.
Mm-hmm.
The best case scenario for us is we line everything up on Fairgrounds Warden, and that gives us 7 power against 5 toughness.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're trying to figure out basically is what the opponent has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could have Inspired Charge feels most likely if they're swinging with the entire team.
Right.
But there are also individual tricks that are pretty bad for us, right? If we crack Puzzle Knot and line everything up on the Fairgrounds Warden and our opponent has Subtle Strike, you know, they absolutely crush us because they put a +1/+1 counter on the Fairgrounds Warden and shrink the Propeller Pioneer, and they get to eat some of our stuff and Fairgrounds Warden doesn't die. So that would be worst case scenario. But I mean, there are other things like +2/+2. We can still eat their Fairgrounds Warden if they have that. So I don't know. Ultimately, my feeling was we were in a bad enough spot here that, you know, if Fairgrounds Warden died, we were in great shape. So I voted for lining everything up on the Fairgrounds Warden.
Yeah, and I think that makes the most sense to me. Like, it beats the most things. It doesn't, like, gets wrecked by Subtle Strike, but the attack all feels most likely Inspired Charge to me. The really bad situation is if it's Inspired Charge plus something else, then we're pretty owned. But that doesn't feel like something we can beat anyway, right?
Right, and I think Subtle Strike owns us enough even if we don't line everything up on the Fairgrounds Warden.
Exactly, right. Like, there just aren't, I'm trying to imagine, like, well, what are the better blocks we can make? Like, let's say we peg them for Inspired Charge. If that's what we peg them for, then I think you have to line it up on Warden, because that's the best way to block that, right? Where we effectively gain 2 from the Pillar Bug, right? So we're effectively at 14 here, not 12. And so even if it's Charge and we get our Gearsmith back and they kill a few of our creatures, we take 9, but we can recover from that pretty effectively once we, you know, Gearsmith comes in, we rebuy our best thing, we have an aviary mechanic in hand to, like, pick up Gearsmith, put it back into play, get something else. Like, Getting Gearsmith back is the way we win this game.
Yes, I agree.
So that is what we ended up doing. Cracked Puzzle Knot, lined everybody up, 7 points of power against the Fairgrounds Warden, 5 points of toughness. Inspired Charge was the play. They killed a couple of our creatures, but we got Gearsmith back and were able to grind a bunch of value out to win the match.
Boom. All right, taking a look at one of mine here. This is a straightforward red-green beatdown deck. Shout out to Alex, no fun, Nikolic. This is 9 forests and 6 mountains the mana base.
And a Whirlermaker that somehow found its way into this deck. So that's the Ben Wernie touch.
Yeah, I mean, we can't just go straightforward nonsense.
Exactly.
So triple attune with Aether also. So we essentially have 18 sources. Our mana is very good. 2 drops are Aether Chaser, Seed Sculptor, and Long Tusk Cub. And then 3 drops, triple Thriving Rhino, Quicksmith Genius, good fours in Pima Outrider, Outland Boar, some 5 drops, and some removal in Chandra's Revolution. Welding Sparks. It is a very straightforward play some creatures, play some combat tricks, play some removal, try to curve out and beat your opponent in. Whirlermaker in case of emergency. So here's what's up on this What's the Play. Your opponent's gotten out to kind of a fast start and you're trying to stabilize with no guarantee of drawing your fourth land. So let me describe the board state to you here. Opponent has Countless Gears Renegade that they've played as their 2-drop and Salivating Gremlins that they've played as their 3-drop. They were on the play. They attacked you with Countless Gears Renegade on turn 2. You have not made a play yet. It's your turn 3, and you have Forest Mountain on the battlefield untapped, and your hand is the following cards: Welding Sparks, Chandra's Revolution, Thriving Rhino, Pima Outrider, Outland Boar. So lots of strong 4-drops and a Blossoming Defense. But you don't know if you're going to draw your fourth land next turn. So your choice right now is either to play Thriving Rhino, which is appealing because it blocks both their creatures, or to cast Welding Sparks either right now or on your opponent's turn.
I think if you're going to cast Welding Sparks, you should do it now, right? You play around Built to Last, or I mean, people aren't really playing Alley Evasion, but I think, you know, if you want to kill the Salivating Gremlins, I would just do it now rather than wait. I'm kind of tempted to play the Thriving Rhino here. This is game 2, so I wonder if you have like any information here.
Yeah, your opponent's very aggressive. They're red white pedal to the metal.
So you feel like you play Rhino, and then what if they go on their turn? I'm gonna attack both. Like, do you just feel like I block Renegade and I trade Rhino with some sort of combat trick? Is that the worst?
Yeah, that's the worst. Like that, or they have a removal spell.
But then they're not adding to the board, and Gremlins is unlikely to. I guess the other option is they play an artifact, and then Gremlins is a 4/3, and they get to attack you for 4.
Right.
This is really tough. I don't actually know what the correct play is here. My gut is telling me to play Rhino, but I could definitely see arguments for playing Welding Sparks. I guess what's the other factor here is you aren't guaranteed a fourth land right now. So you're not guaranteed to be able to deploy your, you know, if you knew that you were going to be able to play Outrider Boar in a row or whatever, however you wanted to sequence that, then I think I'd be much more inclined to play the removal spell now. Just be like, I'm going to stem the bleeding, and then next turn I just get to start deploying these giant threats. But because you don't know that, I kind of feel like putting down Rhino and hopefully being able to hold off Countless Gears Renegade, potentially being able to bounce off the Gremlins, I think would be my play.
Yeah, I ended up opting for the Welding Sparks line, and here's why. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, right?
Okay.
But I think it's how conservative versus how risky you want to be, right? Thriving Rhino, if it works, like if you play Thriving Rhino and your opponent says no attacks, you feel great, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you play Thriving Rhino and your opponent swings both, then like, are you blocking with your Thriving Rhino? You're kind of priced into
it,
right?
You have to, yeah, yeah.
But then you're playing in your opponent's game plan. Maybe they play a trick and they play another 2-drop, and you start to get behind on the board and you brick on lands. I don't know. I think the way that you lose this game is playing Thriving Rhino and your opponent having tricks and or removal and you bricking on lands. So basically, right now we have 7 cards in hand to the opponent's 4. I think our late game is definitely going to be better as soon as we can start casting Pima Outriders and Outland Boar. Like, those are the best cards on the planet against red-white.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my gut says I just want to be as absolutely conservative as possible to not take damage and to try to just make sure that the game can go longer. And I think the best way to do that, even though it feels kind of bad, is to Welding Sparks Gremlins right now. That rules out them playing any artifacts to attack you for 4. I just think it's the most conservative line possible, and I think I want to take the most conservative line when my hand is this good.
There's a couple other things while you were talking about that came to my mind. The first is that one of the reasons I think maybe playing Rhino is good is like, isn't it better to get a trick out of their hand or removal spell out of their hand on Rhino than it is on, you know, Outrider or Boar. What do you think about that?
I don't necessarily agree, because you can Outrider for a 3-3 and a 1-1. Mostly what I'm worried about is the opponent snowballing and falling too far behind.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that's nice about Sparks this turn is that if you do draw a land, then you have the option also of playing Rhino and having Blossoming Defense as backup. So you can go like, look, here's my blocker for your thing. And then your opponent either uses a removal spell or they use their, you know, Built to Last, and then you get to go, aha, I have a +2/+2 as well.
Yeah, that's certainly a consideration as well. I just think as a heuristic, when you're behind and you're trying to stabilize, the best way to stabilize is through casting a removal spell, even if it feels bad, because it lessens the amount of ways your opponent has to push damage, I think.
Right, yeah. Like, it's pretty disastrous if you play Rhino and they just, I think honestly the worst is straight up removal and then they get to smash, or removal plus something else. I mean, if you get to soak up a little bit of damage and they use a combat trick, that's less bad. But yeah, this definitely has the potential to snowball, right? When you have zero threats on board, your opponent has two, and you go to say, here's one threat, and your opponent goes, that's gone, and now I continue to push damage. And then, God forbid, you brick on your land drop the following turn.
Right. So, I mean, if you play Thriving Rhino and your opponent swings both, you're blocking, yes?
Yes, I'm 100% blocking Countless Gears Renegade.
And then they have, like, say, a 1 CMC combat trick, and then play a 3-drop, and you brick on a land. Like, you're in a pretty bad spot there, I think.
Yes, much worse than if you had just said, I'm going to kill the gremlins, and then, and then if you brick, you get to play Rhino the following turn, but then they don't have three creatures in play.
Right. So I did end up Welding Sparks in the gremlin, and then they played Sweatworks Brawler, which a menace creature also, like, makes the Thriving Rhino play a little bit worse. Like, if your plan is blocking and your opponent's leveraging menace creatures. So ultimately it worked out. We drew our fourth land on time, but I think this is an interesting spot.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So here's another one of mine. This is another grindy black white deck. We also, I believe, drafted this together, but then we didn't play out the games together, but this deck was pretty sweet. A lot of artifacts. We do have a hidden stockpile here. We've got another signature of my decks in this format is Double Workshop Assistant for the loop de loops here. Key to the City. Yeheni's Expertise is our rares, a couple Fen Haulers at the top of the curve. This deck was pretty darn good. So here's the situation. It's our turn five, but we're in a little bit of dire straits here. We're on the back foot against this red-green aggressive deck. Our opponent has curved out quite nicely with Kujar Seed Sculptor, Aether Chaser, Druid of the Cowl, and an Untethered Express that already has a counter on it. So our life total is low. It's dangerous. We're at 9 against their 14. It's our turn five. Our board is Foundry Screecher as our only creature, Inventor's Goggles, Underhanded Designs, and Oval Chase Dragster that's currently being held off by an untapped Aether Chaser with First Strike. We have a fifth land drop to give in hand, and our other three spells are Fen Hauler, Dawnfeather Eagle, and Foundry Screecher. So as I see it, we have essentially four options of what we can do. We can just cast Fen Hauler using the two artifacts in play, plus our five lands, to just get a 5/5 on the board. We can cast Dawnfeather Eagle, and you know we could do some fancy crewing, but unfortunately, Dragster, like I said, can't get in. It needs three toughness. So that brings me to our third option, which is to play Foundry Screecher, and then we can use that to crew the Dragster and then equip Goggles to Dragster, so then it'll be out of range, right? It'll be a 7/3, so it can attack through the Aether Chaser. Or we can cast Foundry Screecher and hold up Underhanded Designs to kill their Express if they go to attack us on their turn. So this we're in this like really weird spot of like, we know we have to pressure our opponent, right? Because they're pressuring us quite a bit. And so, you know, we've got these evasive threats that can fly over them, the Screechers, the Eagle. We can get in a huge chunk of damage with Oval Chase Dragster on a turn. But we got to also leave some stuff back. Because if we have no way to block our opponent effectively, you know, they're attacking us with a 6/6 Express. They've got Aether Chaser making a servo potentially. The Aether Chaser is holding off the Dragster right now. So which of those four options do you like, Ben?
Yeah, life totals are super relevant here. When I first looked in on this, my first instinct was, well, we have a great play. We can, you know, go land, crack Underhanded Designs, kill Aether Chaser, play Foundry Screecher, crew Dragster, and swing in for 9. Mm-hmm. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And then I saw the opponent's Untethered Express with a counter on it, and I was like, let's walk that back a little bit.
Right. Any creature then means we're dead because they get to attack with the 6 points from Express, Druid, and the 2 from Kujar Seed Sculptor.
Right. So that's not a great spot to be. So I think you have to play this the most conservatively that you can, which I think is playing Foundry Screecher and holding up underhanded designs for their Untethered Express. And I think you do attack with your one Foundry Screecher here that can attack. So I think you attack, put your opponent to 11, play your 3-1 Foundry Screecher and leave underhanded designs available in case of emergency. And I think if you probably are trading your Foundry Screecher off for their Seed Sculptor if they choose to attack with their Seed Sculptor.
Yeah. The one danger with that, that is the line that I selected. The one danger with that is I think if you're the opponent, then you're not supposed to Crew Express on that turn.
I agree.
So you like essentially light our two mana on fire or force us to pop designs on something else.
But you also put the opponent in kind of a bad spot though, because if they're not being aggressive, that gives you time to stabilize, right?
Right. So if they don't choose to use the Express, then, you know, we now have we have two Screechers, and now we have a Dawnfeather Eagle coming in, or a Fenhaler as a chunker to soak up a lot of Express damage. So yeah, I agree. It puts our opponent in an awkward spot. So that is what I did. I played the Screecher, attacked with the one, put our opponent to 11. On their turn, they did choose to Crew the Express, and we popped the designs off. And then on our turn, we got to do the old, their Aether Chaser was tapped, so we got to go Dawnfeather Eagle in response to the trigger, Crew our Dragster, and then crack in for a bunch of trample damage plus 8 in the air, and we got the win.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting things about this situation is just literally, like, this was a level up moment for me as a Magic player, is seeing a board state like this and thinking through all of the options, right? Like, to know that there are a lot of different permutations and combinations of things you can do with your mana and attacks and things like that. Magic's a complex game. And just taking the time to sit through and say, I have option A, B, C, D. And a lot of times you can rule out, you know, C through F or whatever, just because they're not good options, but that there are a lot of decision points in a game of Magic.
Right. Playing Fenhaler or Dawnfeather Eagle here are not winning lines, but it's just important to note, like, I can do this, I can do this.
There's some thought, I think, right, to what's wrong with Dawnfeather Eagle attacking with Foundry Screecher and then plan to trade Dragster with Untethered Express. You just take too much damage.
I think we just die, right? We take, that's 5 points of trample damage plus, yeah, that's just lethal.
But you have good blocks everywhere else, right? Oh no, because you have to tap the Foundry Screecher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is complex. Yeah, I think doing a lot of these coaching sessions with folks from our Discord and otherwise, that I think it's important to like have those shortcuts in your head of like heuristics of, well, what's the most mana efficient thing I can do? Now the fact that we have, you know, about five different ways to use all of our mana this turn makes this complex, but those are like to have those defaults of like, well, what's the most aggressive thing I can do? What's the most defensive thing I can do? What's the most mana efficient thing I can do? And I think those are the ways that you find the best lines.
Yeah, those are great questions to ask yourself. Love that. All right, next one from me. This is a pretty sweet base red black splashing a Tezzeret the Schemer Planeswalker deck.
Attaboy.
Got a lot of goodies. We've got double Prophetic Prism and a Renegade map to help with the splash. We've got some good removal in Fatal Push, double Underhanded Designs, double Unlicensed Disintegration, Welding Sparks, and Essence Extraction.
This deck is insane. Have you talked about Marionette Master and Herald of Anguish?
I have not. I was getting there. I was going up the curve.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So we have some good cards in this deck.
Wow.
Here's the situation we find ourselves in. Our opponent has played a Siege modification on their Skyskiff, going all in, essentially, hoping that we don't have a removal spell. And on our turn, we've got the choice to kill it with an Unlicensed Disintegration or Amalfis Squad. So life totals are currently 20 to 15. Your opponent has cracked in once with their Siege modified Skyskiff. So it's now a 5-3 flying first strike creature always all the time. They've hit their land drops, curved out, and we were actually on the play, which is sort of a saving grace in the situation. So our turn two was playing Underhanded Designs. Our turn three was playing Weldfast Engineer. And it's now our turn four. We've hit all our land drops with the following cards in hand. So our lands on the battlefield are Swamp Swamp, Mountain Mountain. And our hand is Tezzeret the Schemer, which we have no source for, an Unlicensed Disintegration, and a Amalfis Squad. 3 and a black for the 3-1 Menace and Fabricate. And then we have another Swamp in hand. So the easy, obvious thing to do here, I think, is just to snap off Unlicensed Disintegration. But I think there's a little bit more going on here.
Yeah, my first inclination when I looked at this was, all right, you cast Unlicensed Disintegration this turn, stem the bleeding, attack for 3. And then next turn, you get to go land drop, squad, fabricate, get your little underhanded designs trigger there. So you get the little point to drain. And now you're starting to have a 3-1 menace plus a servo that now the engineer can target. And so that's a pretty good, you know, snowball-y thing now that you've 2-for-1 your opponent with the Disintegration. But we talked about this a little bit before the show, and I think you've got some better ideas here, Ben.
Yeah, so I think my default in general, when I've got a choice to, if I know I have a removal spell locked up that's going to deal with a threat, and I have a choice between developing my board or spending the removal spell, I generally like to try to develop my board before spending the removal spell, because I think you leverage your removal a lot more effectively once you have a board developed, right? That's how you push damage, or you leverage your opponent into making a mistake with attacks or things like that. So all told here, I think there's more bang for your buck if you play Malphas Squad this turn, make it a 3-1 and make a servo. You miss out on the Underhanded Designs drain, but that also gets you a lot closer to being able to crack Underhanded Designs as a removal spell,
right,
if you need it. And I think since you know you can kill this Skyskiff pretty much at will, it's worth taking another 5 damage here. And then the following turn, you know, you can potentially double spell with Unlicensed Disintegration and something else if you draw a cheaper play. I just think there's a lot of upside. And then the following turn after you kill Skyskiff, or you have the option, you're going to be attacking for 9, right?
Yeah,
because
right,
the Weldfast Engineer is going to be giving your servo +2/+0. So I think you're willing to take 5 damage here to develop your board and have better future turns. I think you handicap your future development here if you snap off Unlicensed Disintegration. And I think it's worth 5 damage to develop your board.
Yeah, I think that's so key here, is that then what you get to do, if you play Squad this turn, as you said, you're going to have 9 points of power. Now you also have an artifact in play to unlock the 3 damage from Disintegration. And as you said, to get one step closer to being able to crack designs as a removal spell. Then you have the option, you know, your opponent still probably thinks they're the aggressor. They attack for 5 in the air. Then they play some blocker. Now maybe you kill that instead and you say, look, I can race your Skyskiff all day, because now you're all of a sudden your opponent's at 5, right? You attack for 3 this turn with Engineer. Next turn, if they just play 1 blocker and you attack for 9 and use Disintegration, now they're at 5. Like, they're just dead.
Right.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, I think I would have made the mistake there of snapping off the removal spell.
You know, everyone in Twitch chat was saying, how did you not Unlicense Disintegration there? But I think the idea of when you can afford to leverage your life total to develop your board and save your removal spell, it's a good general thing to do. And this situation illustrates why. You have a lot more leverage with the things on board. Your removal spell gets better in value the better your board is. You know, and it's a hard lesson to learn, right? You know, when we're saying removal's overrated and things like that. One of the first memories I really have of drafting as a kid was in the local shop, you know, back in the before days. Oof. When that was the thing that people did.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I was a 12 or 13 year old kid and I had like 12 removal spells that I drafted and I thought my deck was awesome. And I just lost because I didn't have any way to leverage my removal spells. I didn't have good creatures and I didn't have card advantage to draw to where I was doing better than trading 1-for-1. So I eventually just lost every game after killing my opponent's stuff because they pulled ahead on card advantage or other things, you know?
Yeah. So it feels like, you know, we've had a few situations where it's, you've had this choice of use removal versus play creatures, save removal for later. And I think maybe now I'm developing this, there's a heuristic here potentially of, if you feel like you can be ahead, if you feel like you can be the aggressor, then you save your removal for a crucial turn, right? You leverage it there. And if you feel like you are on the back foot, then you want to use removal to stem the bleeding so that then you can develop your board, because you get in trouble, right? If you feel like you're on the back foot and you're trying to stabilize with creatures, then your opponent has the option of interacting there. Whereas if you just remove their threats, then you buy yourself more time.
Right. You just have a lot more agency that way when you're trying to do it with a removal as opposed to blocking.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Super, super interesting. All right. Next up for me is probably my best deck of the format, Ben. This is quadruple Prophetic Prism, quadruple Reckless Fireweaver, and just like a bunch of artifact nonsense. Got my classic double workshop assistant loops, both Whirler Virtuoso and Maverick Thopterist. Whirler Virtuoso, just, that's our only like energy thing, and I still think it's like really good. We have Dark Intimations because our mana is so good, Inventor's Fair along with our Grixis mana base. This deck was pretty darn sweet. So here is the situation that we found ourselves in with this deck. So we're against a blue-white, looks like a little aggressive. I mean, they've curved out on us quite a bit here. They went Metallic Mimic, naming, I think, Artificer here, maybe Dwarf. I don't know what, I never play Aether Inspector, but they've got a Glintsleeve Artisan and an Aether Inspector. So they've gone 2-drop, 3-drop, 4-drop. Their Glintsleeve Artisan is a 4-4. Their Aether Inspector is a 3-4, and they got their 2 energy. Our board here, we went... got a pretty explosive start here. Turn two, Cogworker's Puzzle Knot into turn three, Maverick Thopterist, which is pretty darn nice, but feeling a little on the back foot. So our opponent's at 20. We're only at 16, but facing down quite a bit of damage with their 4-4 and their 3-4, also making a servo on the following turn if they want. So in hand, we've got a bunch of lands, three mountains, an unlicensed disintegration, an implement of examination, and a self-assembler. And we have one other self-assembler in the deck that we can go find. I think we, again, have, as I can boil it down, we have three options here. We can play a land. That's obviously going to happen. And then we can either play implement and crack it, right? That uses all four of our mana. So that's the most mana efficient use of our turn. Or we can use unlicensed disintegration and target either. I don't think Metallic Mimic is on the board because we can use one of our servos or thopters to trade with that. But we can use unlicensed disintegration to snap off either the artisan or the inspector. The artisan is tapped, so killing the inspector would enable some attacks, but the artisan is a larger threat as a 4-4 versus a 3-4. So what do you like here, Ben?
Well, I think there's a lot going on, right? You're not, you're kind of horrifically far behind, but you have unlicensed disintegration to catch back up. So I think you're almost certainly casting that this turn because you need to affect the board. You can rule out implement as a play because you just need to do something because your opponent's got bigger things than you. You need to stop them from having such good attacks.
Well, but you know that you're going to get 4-4 into 4-4 on the following two turns. Does that change anything at all? That you're like, well, you know, I can take a turn off and use my mana the most effectively, draw two, and then, you know I'm going to have 4-4, 4-4 to hopefully stem the bleeding.
I don't think so, because you know you have that regardless of whether or not you play implement. So I'd rather, after all the dust has settled, play my implement and draw my cards after I've made the board more favorable for me.
Yeah.
So I'm locked in 100% to firing off unlicensed disintegration here. I'm just trying to decide whether it's the tapped Glint Sleeve Artisan or the Aether Inspector. The line I like the best, I think, is unlicensed disintegration, the Aether Inspector, which prevents your opponent from using that energy to make a servo, at least in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
And then also opens up attacks for you. You can swing with all five of your creatures, and then your opponent's potentially at 12 with just a 2-1 and a 4-4, and they don't have great options on the crackback. I mean, they can crack you back, but you're fine going to 10, knowing that you've got self-assemblers and a super wide board of servos and thopters to block. I just think you put yourself in a pretty favorable position here if you unlicense disintegration the inspector and swing out. Maybe they block with Metallic Mimic, maybe they don't. But regardless, I think the board is a lot better for you and your self-assemblers are going to be a lot more impactful.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's super interesting. So I do agree that disintegration has to be the play this turn. But, you know, deciding, do you fire it off now? Do you do that? I think there's an option of I just pass and then maybe I line up a bunch of blocks on you know, I have Thopterist plus 2/1s on a 4/4. And then if they go for something tricksy, then you have this like huge blowout potential with disintegration. But I also think they might just be fine with you, you know, losing your Thopterist in 2/1s, that they wouldn't do anything. And then your board is a lot less exciting. So it's a super interesting like flip, because I feel like I start this turn by thinking, oh boy, I'm on the back foot. How do I stem the bleeding? But then this option of, oh, I can just blow up the 3/4 and all of a sudden they take three from disintegration. I think that also factors in a pretty big amount here of that disintegration also deals three. And then you get to attack for five, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, I'm racing, and I know I have 4-4 into 4-4 to deal with your Glintsleeve Artisan.
Right, and even if they deal with your 4-4s, you've got servo chumps going on, or thopto chumps, in case of emergency, you know, if they can deal with your self-assembler.
Yeah.
And then you're still bored back at parity, but I think leveraging an attack here is pretty good for you.
Yeah, so that is what I did. I fired off the disintegration here, swung with the team, and then got to follow up with some self-assemblers, and went on to win this game. This deck was sweet. This is definitely my best deck of the format, I think.
It is really nice looking.
Our last What's the Play here is not a very good deck. It's blue-green, blue-green splashing Dovin, which is just terrible. I forgot to tell you, I played against Dovin yesterday in the draft challenge, and my opponent ultimated Dovin, and I still won.
What I don't... true to form, I do not know what a Dovin ultimate does.
Your opponent get an emblem or they can only untap two permanents a turn.
And you won through that? That's impressive.
Won through that, yeah. Hidden Stockpile is a hell of a drug. Just pumping out 1/1s and with, I think I had a Chief of the Foundry to make them 2/2s. So it just like didn't matter that I couldn't untap very much. Anyway, so yeah, Dovin is terrible, but I was like, oh, I kind of want to play it. And green usually lets me splash. I didn't really actually get there on the fixing. Only one attuned with Aether and then an Aether Hub. as ways to splash the Dovin. It's just like a derpy green blue. You know, we have some busted starts. We've got a green belt Rampager, long tusk cub, ether swooper, but you know, triple seed sculptor, and you know, a couple things at the top of the curve like a rib scale tusker and a lifecraft cavalry, but not very exciting deck at all. So here's our situation. We're game one against red black removal dot deck. The board is as follows. Our opponent is at 16. They have a servo, a filigree familiar, and an ether poisoner with two energy. They have two cards left in hand. They fired off, I think, three removal spells at this point. Our board is a Hinterland Drake with a counter on it. So it's a 3-4. Kujar Seed Sculptor is a 1-2, and Druid of the Cowl is a 1-3. Our board is three islands, two forests. In hand, we have an uncastable Dovin. We haven't found a white source yet. And we have Hunt the Weak. So our opponent, like I said, they fired off a bunch of removal spells. We're sort of like at parity-ish here. We've got a 1-3 and a 1-2. We can have the 1-3 bounce off the Filigree Familiar. 1-2 Seed Sculptor can like trade with the Poisoner, holds off a servo. And we're cracking in effectively with our Hinterland Drake as a 3-4 in the air. Like I said, our opponent has two cards in hand, but they fired off a handful of removal spells already. And so basically the consideration here is to play Hunt the Weak or not, because it's a spell we can cast. And in my mind, our opponent's life total here is quite relevant, because as Hinterland Drake stands as a 3-4, it's a 6-turn clock to kill them at 16. But Hunt the Weak getting a counter on the Drake accelerates that to a 4-turn clock exactly in the air. And there's nothing really that I want to fight, right? That's the other problem. Like, we can't fight the Death Toucher. Filigree Familiar will draw them a card, so I don't really want to do that. And the servo is irrelevant. So Hunt the Weak would essentially just be putting a +1/+1 counter on our Drake here to accelerate the clock. So I think those are really the only options you have, is whether or not you want to cast Hunt the Weak here.
Yeah. So for me, when I look at this board, there's nothing that makes me particularly want to cast Hunt the Weak. So to spoil this, because I think it's an interesting discussion, you decided to Hunt the Weak the Hinterland Drake on the servo, mm-hmm. to give yourself a 4-turn clock in the air.
Yeah.
And when I looked at this, what's the play? My what's the play is to just swing with Hinterland Drake and do nothing and hold on to Hunt the Weak.
Yeah.
Which I think is fine. Like, I guess I'm curious as to why you felt the need to be so aggressive here, because as I see it, you know, you've got advantage, right? You're ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You're not even really at parity, because you're cracking in for three a turn with the Hinterland Drake, and your opponent has no good attacks. You can block Druid of the Cowl on Filigree Familiar, and you can block Kujar Seed Sculptor on their Aether Poisoner or their servo.
Mm-hmm.
So you're pretty favored here, and I think you can just save your removal spell for the next threat they play. Your opponent had 5 mana and their best play was Aether Poisoner. I mean, that seems pretty encouraging for you just to, you know, draw cards and ride the game out.
Yeah, I don't know. I just felt like I'm out of gas here. If we're like essentially in top deck mode, I feel like red black might be able to draw more removal. I mean, we have seen a lot of removal spells already, so that makes them less likely to have one. But, you know, the quicker I can end this game, I felt like the better, because if they do remove the Drake, I guess I'm not out, because like you said, I can hold off stuff, but I don't know how I'm winning if they get rid of the Drake in the next few turns.
And you just feel like your deck is that bad that you don't have any good draws.
Well,
I mean, you can draw a Tusker, you can draw Tezzeret's Ambition.
But Tusker doesn't do anything on this board,
I guess.
Right. I mean, as long as they've got like the Poisoner is pretty brutal here. Like, I have Aether Swooper as another flying threat, but yeah, I don't really have very good draws.
But your opponent is also not killing you, I guess would be what I would say to you.
Yeah.
It feels bad to me to spew off a removal spell here when we're not dying.
Yeah.
Like, if we were in a racing situation, sure, sign me up. But like, you're just at parity with you being slightly ahead, I think.
Yeah, it's very true. I know. I mean, maybe it's just super fancy to think about, look, this accelerates the clock by 2 turns.
Well, I think it's interesting to think about, because it did not even come across my mind. You know, we were talking about earlier, like, you know, you have A, B, C, D, E, F or whatever, and you can rule out some of the others.
You thought there, like, was A.
It just did not even enter my mind that was a possible play, because I think it's so low value.
I think there's definite value.
No, I agree. I think that's interesting. It's interesting. That's the most aggressive line. I think one of the most interesting things that's come out of all of this is your way of framing it as like looking at plays as what's the most aggressive play you could make. what's the most defensive, and what's the most mana efficient. That's a really good way to summarize like chunking those options and trying to rule out some of the other ones that are maybe irrelevant. And so the most aggressive play you can make here is hunt the weak on your hinterland drake, killing their 1/1. That's an interesting framework to look at it through.
Yeah.
And I've never thought about it that way before.
Sweet. Well, if anything, this huge blowout of me casting Hunt the Weak on my Drake and then my opponent casting Welding Sparks in response to kill the Drake at least has presented that as a good heuristic. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like maybe it was one of the first times we had Ryan on when we were talking about like, you know, building decks with optimism or drafting aggro decks or whatever, like that idea of getting your opponent to zero exactly, right? Thinking back that way is one of the things that I think about a lot. And this turn, I think, exemplifies that of going, oh, well, I can actually make it an exactly 4-turn clock in the air here, but did end up getting savagely 2-for-1.
Yeah. Very cool. What's the play though? And I think there's a lot of takeaways, just even more than the plays in the individual things, like a lot of in-game things to think about. And I really especially like that shortcut of how to grok the decisions for most aggressive, most behind, and most mana efficient.
Yeah, I think those are really good things to just keep track of all the time.
All right, I think that's going to do it for us. Great place to wrap up the episode. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
Thank you so much to ChannelFireball.com for sponsoring this podcast. If you are heading over to CFB to take advantage of their sweet, sweet Black Friday / Cyber Monday deal today that the episode is released, please use code LOL at checkout to let them know we sent you there. You can check us out on Twitch and Twitter. I'm at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben's at twitch.tv/MrMetronome. Mr. is spelled out. You can tweet at us under those same usernames, and you can tweet at the podcast at Lords of Limited.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.